Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on General Government for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Thursday, February the 23rd, 2012. We are here today for a variety of issues, but there has been a couple of changes in the agenda, and I want to call them to your attention. If you are here for any action on House Bill 2020, that is not going to happen. We will receive the comp plan report, but there will be no action on the bill. If you are here for a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4131A, you might want to find something to do for the next hour and a half. And with that, we're going to continue with the agenda as it was published. When we were last together, we had concluded the public hearing on Senate Bill 1587, and we are going to go directly into work session. And with that gavel, I now convene the work session on Senate Bill 1587. And I would be ask Ms. Toe to just refresh the committee and people listening on where we are, and then I would entertain a motion.
Okay. Co-Chair Johnson, co-chairs, members of the committee, you have before you Senate Bill 1587. We had a public hearing on it on Tuesday. What you have before you for the work session is the Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment completely replaces the bill. The only thing it asks, it requires is that the Appraiser Certification and Licensing Board report to the Legislative Assembly on or before May 1st, 2013, three issues, the board's procedures for dispute and resolution, the board's procedures relating to conflicts of interest among board members, and the current process by which a person becomes an appraiser. The Dash 3 includes a definition of dispute. It defines it to mean a case or complaint handled by the Appraiser Certification and Licensing Board that was filed by the board and an appraiser or property owner against the appraiser. The Dash 3 also removes any qualification for the county assessor.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of the professional staff? There being none, I would entertain a motion.
Go ahead.
Representative Girard.
Madam Chair, I would move that we accept Senate Bill 1587 to move it forward with the Dash 3 amendments. So I guess that my amendment really should be to add the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1587.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, Representative Girard has moved the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1587. Are there any questions? Any discussion? Any Representative?
Madam Chair, I would just like to note that what we see here is pretty much just a report regarding procedures for dispute resolution, procedures relating to conflicts of interest, current processes, and so forth. It looks like there have been some important clarifications, and I want to note that there's a minimal expenditure impact on state or local government, so looks pretty straightforward.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any other discussion? Any objections? The Dash 3s are adopted.
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Girard.
I would move Senate Bill 1587 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Colleagues, you have heard Representative Girard's motion to move amended Senate Bill 1587 to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Ms. Toe, you need carriers. Do we have any volunteers? We need to full and to then the floor.
I think it's my turn.
Representative Nathanson graciously volunteers to take this bill to full. Would you take it to the House too?
Sure.
Okay. Should we offer to Senator Winters for the Senate?
What a lovely idea. We'll offer to Senator Winters on the Senate side. Thank you. I guess before I close the work session, I would just like to say in conversations with board leadership, you get some very specific language in this bill. I call your attention particularly to the conflicts of interest section. It appears to me that there has been a bit of legalese exercised with respect to conflicts of interest, actual or real or perceived. And I would hope that you would be expansive as you look and prepare this report, because perception is part of the problem at this point, in my opinion. All right, colleagues, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1587 and change professional staff. And we will now, in deference, Madam Secretary, welcome to our committee. Where do we want to go now? We'll go to the State Library. Great. Okay. And open a work session on the State Library, the Secretary of State, Oregon Judicial Department, and invite Madam Secretary and staff up to the witness table. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, everyone, Secretary of State Kate Brown. With me is my Archives Division Director, Mary Beth Herkert. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here today on behalf of the work that this is completed and in front of you. I wanted to make a few brief comments about the report, and then I'm happy to turn it over to the experts. First of all, I wanted to thank the number of folks that have been involved in this process, from Janet Webster, who regularly drove up from Newport, to Duke Shepherd in the governor's office, who took time out of his busy schedule to participate and assist, and to Sam Hall, who dedicated his valuable volunteer time. I cannot name everybody, but I just wanted to give you a few examples of the wonderful folks who participated. We could not have done this report without them. Second, I wanted to encourage you to either implement the recommendations or if you feel that further study is appropriate, refer the recommendations onto the Government Efficiency Task Force, which I haven't discussed with the chair of the Government Efficiency Task Force, Madam Co-Chair, but we thought that would be an appropriate location. If the committee has a better location, feel free.
Madam Secretary, I think before you get into the meat of the report, I might just defer to the professional staff. We have people listening on to the proceedings who may not know the background, and I would just ask Mr. Borden if he would be so kind to set the stage, both for the benefit of the committee and anybody listening.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. Before you is the, as you noted, Chair of the State Library, Secretary of State, and Judicial Department's budget note report. The report asked the Governor's Office, the Secretary of State, and the Chief Justice requested that they convene a work group to develop options and make recommendations on the consolidation and improvement of library and archive services and make a report to the Joint Ways and Means Committee and the Appropriate Policy Committee during this February session. Specifically, the work group was asked to look at the consolidation of state archive services, increased utilization of digital resources, the elimination of duplicative state subscription and subscription services across state agencies, reductions of state library facility costs, consolidation of services of the state library, higher education libraries, and the state law library, development of public-private partnerships for law library and archive services, development of a more cost-efficient delivery system for the Talking Books and Braille Services program within the library, leveraging additional federal grant funding for the library and library services, and the satisfaction of this budget note relates to a second budget note within the law, within the state library's budget, which directed that half of their budget be unscheduled pending the legislature's receipt of this report.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Borden? Thank you. Now, Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So as you can see from the length and the meticulous detail of the report, hundreds of hours were expended in producing this report and addressing the concerns that were raised in the underlying budget note. I hope, and frankly, we'll be pounding on all of your doors if the report sits on a shelf to gather dust. And while the recommendations might not result in millions of dollars of savings, it's incumbent upon all of us to work together to create greater efficiencies in state government. The recommendations include suggestions about collaboration and consolidation, elimination of duplicate services, development of public-private partnerships, and, of course, greater use of technology. Some of the recommendations will take extensive periods of time to implement, and others will be relatively easy to implement. Either way, I believe that the net impact of this work will be beneficial, both in terms of administrative efficiencies as well as cost savings. Thanks, and I look forward to working with you to taking action on these recommendations. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to have my Director of Archives, Mary Beth Herkert, make some remarks as well.
Thank you. Welcome, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Sure. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Herkert, and I am the director of the Secretary of State's Archives Division. Before you is a list of 27 recommendations that the committee is bringing forward for your consideration. Not all of the recommendations are short-term solutions. Some will take longer to implement. However, the overriding theme of these recommendations is doing our work more efficiently, eliminating duplication where possible, using technology to improve upon manual processes, and ensuring that our information is readily available and easily accessible to all of our constituents. For example, in the Archives and State Library Services Subcommittee, we looked at government documents, the majority of which are electronic publications. We discussed and agreed that these documents could easily be incorporated into the Oregon Records Management solution that the Archives Division has developed for statewide use. This would allow government documents to be managed and maintained in a single system while providing access through a web portal easily accessed either through the State Library, State Archives, or State Law Library's webpage. It was further agreed that the older government documents could be scanned and put into the ORMS system as well, providing widespread access to such things as agency annual reports or anniversary and celebratory publications currently accessible only in hard copy. Another recommendation of the subcommittee is to partner with higher education institutions in the state, creating a dynamic internship program where students get practical experience in the field of archives and libraries, while we would benefit from an additional resource. Both the library and archives have begun pursuing this option. The Archives is currently working with Western Oregon University on creating a formal internship program where university students in the public history program would get credit for working while they at the Archives as an intern. This began this winter term 2012, and currently there are 11 students enrolled in the program, and it's working really well. The State Library has also successfully utilized an intern from the Atkinson School to study the effectiveness of the library's key performance measures and make recommendations for improvement, and has recently adopted new policies and procedures for the successful recruitment and utilization of interns. These are just a couple of the many recommendations contained in the report. The group feels that by moving forward with these recommendations, that our constituents will be better served and our programs will become more efficient. And I thank you for the opportunity, and if you have any questions, I'm willing to answer them.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Look forward to working with you as we implement the recommendations.
Actually, Madam Chair, can I make one quick comment?
Please, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Secretary, Ms. Herkert. I just want to thank you, not only from a budget perspective, but from an access perspective. One of my big concerns right now with the proliferation of information on the web in particular is that it's very difficult for people to know where to look. And centralizing our resources as a state will allow Oregonians and those outside the state to have a much clearer entry portal, and I think that's very important in terms of the services that we're trying to provide. I'm old enough to remember when you had to go to multiple libraries to try to find something. We should be long past that stage now, and you're helping us move in that direction. So please accept my gratitude for that work.
Thank you. However, that is a perfect segue into, before we conclude this, part of the genesis of this conversation was, for me, the rather shocking discovery of what I thought was duplication and the issues that I had with the State Library in terms of voluminous research that they were doing that I was hard-pressed to find a nexus to public employee jobs. And what I perceive to be an extremely inadequate explanation by now retired state librarian Mr. Shecky about how thin the sieve was for people to access research at the library. I have been given recently a report that detail some of the essential functions of the government research services at the State Library. Did you in your deliberations look into this issue? Because I'm still not satisfied that the material that the library provided the committee last session is all work-related. I mean, just looking at the titles, I am hard-pressed to understand how that becomes work-related.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we did look at a lot of the issues relating to that, but I think it'd be best addressed by the interim state librarian, and that's Mary Kate, and so that she can look at that. We did look at a lot of that, who they were serving, what they were serving, and some of the issues that are addressed there, and that's what we're hoping is that with a more collaborative effort, we can really narrow down what really relates to state government.
I would be happy to invite the interim state librarian, Ms. Dahlgreen, to come forward, either pull up another chair or one of you may have to depart.
We can slide over or I can depart.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, while she's coming up, I just wanted to invite, I know that Senator Steiner Hayward is new to the legislature, but I just wanted to inform her about the electronic records management system that we have and invite her for a virtual tour, so to speak, and if any of the other legislators are interested. Our agency, we're working with a number of other agencies to get the system implemented, and we're also working with local governments as well. So we think it's a really wonderful system and a really wonderful tool for both transparency and accessibility for all of our constituents.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I look forward to taking you up on that offer.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Mary Kay Dahlgreen. I'm the interim state librarian at the Oregon State Library. Co-Chair Johnson, co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity, and I'm guessing that you want me to answer the question of how we determine.
Let me be unambiguous.
Okay.
Mr. Shepke and I had some pretty robust conversations on this subject, and so set that aside. Then I had the opportunity to read your January 11th memorandum that talked about trying to establish a nexus, and I quote from it, GRS, short for the Government Research Services. Staff also monitor information requests to assure that state employees are seeking work-related resources and not for personal business. I posed that question to Mr. Shepke, and on the record, his answer was, we're librarians. We do whatever anybody tells us. We don't inquire as to the nexus between research and work. And now there's the assertion in your memorandum that does happen. Why the seeming contradiction between what Mr. Shepke said and what your report says, and can you show me any evidence to suggest that? And for the benefit of our new colleague, Senator Steiner Hayward, the thing that I found the most shocking was the amount, and I don't mean to say this in an anti-theological context, and anybody that's listening, it's not that I am have difficulties with organized religion, but I was shocked at the amount of religious research that seemed to be going on, evolution versus creative design. And the answer that I got was, we're doing this research for the chaplains at DOC. I didn't buy it then, and maybe you can try to convince me now. But that's the genesis of my problem, and I want to just tell you ahead of time, I'm shaping up to try to convince this committee that there ought to be a budget note that actually requires evidence of work-related research.
Co-Chair Johnson, co-chairs, members of the committee, I can't at this point speak for Jim Shepke, so I will have to speak for my understanding of the process at the State Library currently. The process at the State Library currently is if, and Jim's right, well, I shouldn't say that. We are a library, but we are not a public library. The State Library, although we do have a public portion, the primary purpose of the Government Research Services Unit is to provide information for state agency employees. When state agency employees are working, when they are using state assets, those need to be used for state projects. So we do have a process in place that if there is a request for something from a state agency staff member and it appears that it is not state agency related, we request more information. If that request does not meet our understanding, then we talk to the manager. And unless we understand that it is related to state agency work, we will not provide those materials. Now, the library, the state library is also a public library in that all of the materials in the state library are available for people who walk into the library. So we do have a process in place, and I can give you actually a pretty good example of how that worked. We had a staff member at the state library who requested a video, a DVD, that was not work-related at all. And the Government Research Services staff went to her and said, is this work-related? And she said no. And we said, we cannot retrieve this for you from another organization. And she was not very happy, but we explained that the state library is not, the state Government Research Services is there to serve state agency staff, to provide information for state agency staff.
I'm going to follow up on my own question. If that process is in place, are you telling me that for the 236,440 requests, you went through that kind of screening for every one of those requests?
I do not know the answer to that question, but I can certainly find out.
And I would be quite curious to know who's the final arbiter. If somebody comes in and says, doing research on intelligent design is related to my work, and your staff has any question, who's the final arbiter of that?
I believe it's the employee's manager, but I will check on that as well.
Okay. All right. I'll just try to beat this to death by saying that in your report of January 11th, where you talk about when making a request, an employee must agree to comply with our service agreement. I don't know how that query is made or how the promise to agree with it occurs. If the request does not meet standard criteria for job-related material, where is printed that standard criteria? How would you know? If the requester does not adequately explain the relationship between their request and their job duties, their manager is contacted. I'd sure like to know some evidence that that has happened or how many times it has happened. A request will be canceled if there is insufficient justification. Could you deliver for this committee any times that it was that a request was denied?
The example that I just used was a request denied.
Out of 236,000 requests, that's one example. There must be others.
And I would be very happy to look into that. I don't have that at my fingertips, but I'm very happy to find that information and convey it to you.
And, colleagues, I would just suggest for those of you that didn't go through this exercise the last time, you must have the compilation again. You do it by quarter, do you not, of the requests?
I believe so.
Could you provide for the professional staff so the committee can take a look at it, a compilation of the requests for the last quarter?
Yes.
I would be eager to just compare that with the requests that we saw in the preceding hearing on this subject. Okay. Colleagues, any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Dahlgreen.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We are, I think, Mr. Borden, the issue before the committee would be to accept the report on consolidation and improvement of library and archive services, would it not? Or do you have other advice for us?
No, Co-Chair, that's the recommendation of your staff, Steve Bender, and myself.
Okay. Anybody else we need to hear from before we take action on this? Okay. Then we're in work session, and the chair would entertain a motion. Representative Nathanson.
Madam Chair, I move that we acknowledge receipt of the report.
Colleagues, any questions? Representative Air Brewer.
Just looking at the last page of LFO's recommendation about the work group satisfy the minimal requirements, but did not present a specific plan to move forward with the recommendations. Secretary Brown's suggestion of moving it to the Efficiency Task Force, I mean, is that something that we should include to the full Ways and Means, or what do we do with this? What's that dialogue going to be?
I just made eye contact with the chair of the Government Efficiency Work Group, who indicated that she would gratefully receive this additional task in her scope of work.
Thank you.
All right.
Indeed.
So the motion before us is to accept receipt of the report, you've heard Representative Air Brewer's recommendation. Is there any objection to Representative Air Brewer's recommendation to be included in the motion? Can we do that all in one lump sum, Mr. Borden, that we would acknowledge receipt of the report, but when it's presented to full, we would have the opportunity to say that further activity should occur in the government efficiency workforce?
Co-chair, I think that could just be part of the motion. Is for what the subcommittee adopts is fine.
Okay. Then, colleagues, that's the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you very much. I think carriers to full would be Representative Nathanson.
It would.
And that's all we need.
Again.
Thank you very much. Okay. We'll close the work session on State Library Secretary of State Oregon Judicial Department Report on Consolidation and Improvement of Library and Archive Services. And we will open a work session on the Department of Administrative Services Report on their comp plan. And Mr. Borden, would you? Oh, except you
we
morphed. You morphed into, and you're not a representative. We morphed into Mr. Hill. Mr. Hill, would you tee up our conversation?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, ORS 291-371 requires the Department of Administrative Services to report to the committee on any compensation plan changes. This particular report covers comp plan and insurance agreements with the Association of Oregon Correctional Employees, the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Criminal Investigator Association, and the Executive Service, Unclassified Excluded and Management Service Employees, and lastly, Classified and Unclassified Unrepresented Service Employees.
Thank you very much. And are we going to have a presentation?
I believe so, yes. There's Mr. Naughton. He can come
in. Mr. Naughton, would you please join us? How fortuitous you should arrive just at that moment.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I'm George Naughton with the Administrative Budget and Management Division. Donna Vance actually on her way back over here. She's in transit right now. So I can answer questions as you have them on the compensation plan.
Would you prefer to wait for your colleague to arrive, because we can go ahead and move on to some other business while we await her arrival?
That would make sense, Madam Chair.
Okay, colleagues, is that acceptable? So we will just stand at ease on.
Let me go get. I'll get Lori for you on the next item.
Okay, that would be great.
Is that okay?
All right, we're at ease also while we're changing LFO professional staff who just arrived. Ms. Byerly. Welcome.
Your timing is impeccable.
There she is. She's here now.
Oh, good. All right. Oh. Goodbye, Ms. Byerly. This truly is the end of the session. Will you join us, please?
Yes, thank you.
We are at the point, just while you catch your breath from coming over here, we are in work session on the Department of Administrative Services. We are receiving a report on the comp plan. And Mr. Naughton indicated that you were the best person to make that report on behalf of the agency.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Sandoval Bennett, and I am the chief HR officer for the state. I'm working with the Department of Administrative Services. And I am assuming what you're asking about is the supervisor ratio. No, the comp plan.
Yes, please.
And specific to what, I'm sorry?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the report that you submitted on the compensation for AOCE, OSPOA, CIA, and the Management Service, Executive Service, and Unrepresented Employees.
Okay, and this is the report that I sent over this morning. Is that what you're talking about?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Let the committee stand at ease. Just for a moment, we'll go off the record while perhaps... to come out of standing at ease, and we are now going to, just to make the record complete, I'm going to ask Mr. Hill to just make some comments for the benefit of people who might be listening to this, and then we'll turn to you for the report.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Administrative Services is required to report to the legislature anytime they make changes to the compensation plan. And as I stated, there were, if you remember during the interim committee back in September, we got the first batch, which was the SEIU and the AFSCME employees and a few others. And this is now a follow-up. This is the next group of folks, and it included the groups that, as I stated before. So they are here just to continue explaining about the compensation plan changes.
Thank you.
Would you restate your name for the record, please?
Yes, Donna Sandoval Bennett. And let me say that I have read this report. I was not in my current position when the labor negotiations were being conducted and the agreements were made with the various collective bargaining groups. I am familiar, however, with the 1.5% increases that were agreed to, those are part of the current compensation packages for those who are represented within these agencies.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Bennett? All right, then I would entertain first of all, LFO, any comments? The recommendation, I presume is receive.
Acknowledge receipt of the report, ma'am.
Okay. Representative Garak.
Madam Chair, I would move that we accept the report from the Department of Administrative Services in regard to the comp plan report.
Okay. Colleagues, any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? We have received receipt of the report. Or
thank
acknowledged
you.
Receipt of the report.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We need a carrier for this, both to full and, just to full. Representative Garrard, thank you for your courtesy and volunteering. All right, we're going to close the work session on the Department of Administrative Services reports and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1530A relating to funding for technology projects for the Department of Revenue. Welcome Ms. Byerly. Ask Ms. Byerly to make any opening comments, and then we'll invite the department to come forward.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, this bill comes to you from the Revenue Committee. In your packet, you will see a copy of the staff measure summary, fiscal impact statement, the bill itself, measure history. You'll see that it had a couple hearings and a work session in Senate Revenue. And you'll also see at the very back of the packet there is a letter from the Revenue Committee co-chairs to the Ways and Means co-chairs about some concerns related to the bill, not so much with the content of the bill, but the kind of overall questions about the department's technology project. And for context, what this bill does is it sets up some of the statutory mechanisms that are needed to allow the department to eventually enter into the performance-based contract they've discussed with you several times for the core systems project. It doesn't actually implement the project itself, but it does set up some statutory provisions for them to move forward. It includes a provision for some baselining to be developed. I think if you recall, that's a key component of how the performance-based contract would work. There would be a baseline revenue amount that would be recorded, and the vendor would be ultimately paid out of that revenue stream. So, again, we talked in January with the agency about the project. It was real clear at that time that this is still a work in progress, and they're working with the vendor on negotiations to figure out exactly what these pieces would look like and what that revenue component as well as the work component's like. Anyway, it came down here from Senate Revenue with a recommendation for you to have some conversations with the agency and anybody else that wants to speak to it. I think that pretty much sums up my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Byerly. I'll invite the agency up. We had had a sign-up sheet out. One person has signed up for public testimony. Anybody else wishing to testify? We can put the sheet back out. Okay. Nobody indicating that they want to, so we'll welcome Ms. Gregory.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Excuse me, Madam Co-Chair, just a point of inquiry.
Representative Gregory.
This is only a public hearing?
That is correct.
Thank you.
And I want to make sure, Patty, I indicated, I think, when I opened the hearing that this is just a public hearing. So with that, Ms. Gregory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Karen Gregory. I'm the acting director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Ms. Bailey gave a very good synopsis of why we're here today, approving Senate Bill 1530. 30 today actually puts Oregon in a much better negotiating position with the vendor. We're in that negotiating process now. It really signals to the vendor, who has already put a lot of money into this process, that Oregon is serious about doing a core systems replacement. As you know, we have delayed the implementation until next biennium, when we'll come back to you for your final approval for that project. But it assures, if we pass Senate Bill 1530, it assures that the funding mechanism is ready. And then when the legislature approves, that's my positive thinking, the core system replacement in 2013, if the funding mechanism is already in process, we can begin getting the system implemented early, as soon as we get the approval, and we'll start getting fast wins and start getting money into the fund. And as you know, members of the Revenue Committee had concerns about the fact that the RFP that we put out was only for a benefits-based procurement. They really wanted, a number of the members were interested in seeing what the cost would be for a flat cost if the state just bought the system. We provided information to them that, from the company we're working with, that said that it would be between $5 and $10 million right now in terms of the uplift, if you will, for the benefits based rather than if Oregon purchased it outright. However, that's based on information that we've now had for about 4 months. And if we did go out and we did do another RFP, there's no telling that, those numbers would remain the same. So the department has already invested about $6 million in the system, in preparing for the system and doing the budget note and all of the reporting to get organized for the implementation over the last 2 years. And if we were to do another procurement or do anything different to this procurement, we'd be delaying the system for a period of time. It would cost us more dollars just to go out and do a new procurement and so on. And quite frankly, the department can't continue funding this project without additional dollars from the legislature. So Karen Johnson is our attorney on this procurement. We've been working with her for about 2 years on this, and she's in the audience if you'd like to ask specific questions about what a extension to the procurement or a new procurement would mean.
I would be happy to invite her to come forward in case there are questions. Colleagues, I'm going to exercise a prerogative of the chair and ask the first one. The more I learn about this system, Ms. Gregory, the more troubled I am by it. And one of the things that I would, Ms. Johnson is welcome to come forward. One of the things that I would like to zero in on today is this baseline data collection. The vendor gets paid based on improvement off of a baseline. But if I understand this correctly, the vendor is helping to set the baseline information. So what's to not incentivize the vendor to position the baseline data in a way that makes it more favorable when the improvement is monetized? It seems to me a little like the fox watching the hen house, and I'm just trying to figure out, either you or your lawyer, explain why it is or how the mechanism is, where you've got what seems to me to be an inherent conflict, where the person that's going to receive financial benefit is helping to set the game rules.
So, Senator, Madam Co-Chair, Eric Smith is in the audience as well, and he is an he's been working on the negotiation.
Come on down, Mr. Smith. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Eric Smith, and I am the manager of the Program Management Office for the Department of Revenue. To your question?
Please.
Both the vendor and the state have an interest in the baselines, and so it is being developed cooperatively. And in the, I think that the draft, the 2-2 amendments, there is a provision in there where the department, in consultation with the Legislative Revenue Office, will be establishing the baselines. And so that is the assurance that we can try to give from the state's perspective, that it's not just the department working with the vendor. We will also have a third set of eyes on that. The state's interests are to make sure that we are setting baselines that will truly indicate that anything above that will be based on the performance of the system and that we won't be giving things away that we would otherwise achieve. The vendor needs to be at the table, though, too, because they are going to be putting their money on the line first. They're front-loading it by paying for the system and bringing it in, paying for their staff to be here before those benefits are realized. And they want to make sure that the baselines that are being set are going to set targets that they realistically think that they'll achieve. It's a partnership, and it's the beginning of a long-term business partnership.
But do you understand how, you know, hitting baselines that they would achieve? I set the baselines. It's pretty easy to achieve them when I help set them. I get paid based on improvement over the baselines. Pretty easy to set them in a way that makes sure I get maximum remuneration. And I'm just trying to figure out, I understand having the Legislative Revenue Office involved is helpful, but are there any other quality assurance measures here? We're setting up how we're going to pay these people, and your answer was not entirely reassuring.
Yes. Madam Chair, I understand your concern. We are not experts at setting these baselines, and so we hired a consultant named Blue Crane Consulting, a gentleman named Ralph Shoemaker, who worked with the state of California for 30 years, who is actually one of the pioneers of performance-based or benefits-based contracts, and he has been alongside us and helping us along this. We're using information from other states and projects that they have had to learn from them about what their baselines look like, and I can assure you that we are providing a good challenge for the vendor, that the baselines that they are negotiating with us right now are not going to be easy targets for them to meet compared to the work that we would already achieve without a system.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I share your concerns. I think we are certainly risking a major mistake, and I think we are probably making at least a small one. And let me lay out the case, although it's going to make, and you can then, I'll pose a question at the end to be nice, you know, for whatever, but really I want to manifest my opposition, okay, and explain it. So the reason that we enter, and first of all, State of California is a lousy example. I think they just signed on to, what, a $2 billion computer system. It is the national headquarters of state government getting hoodwinked from computer programs. And I'm not ready to take on that. And the fact that we're bringing up their guy because he's going to help us get hoodwinked too, I'm not really down with that either. The reason you enter into performance-based contracting is if the private contractor is a better risk possessor than the state. There are two reasons that somebody might be a better holder of the risk. And by the way, we pay a fee. It's not a spoken fee, but we pay for somebody else holding the risk. Same thing in entrepreneurship, same thing in finance, same thing everywhere. So the only reason you'd let, really only two reasons you'd let somebody else hold the risk is either if they have more money or if they know more. Right? So we don't hold the risk because, they'll screw us on the contract. I was thinking about a different word. I couldn't come up with it. They'll screw us on the contract. And so we will, and so we'll make sure that the only way they can screw us on the contract is on the baseline, because they'll want to make sure at least the job gets done. It won't be a Water Bureau thing, because at least the job will get done. We might get nailed on the price, but at least it'll get done. And that, I guess, is good. But I want to go after those two things. First, on the expertise. It seems to me, and I want to say this to the members of this subcommittee and to the Revenue Department and anybody else listening, that we seriously consider our path so that the only way going forward to evaluate technology projects is not merely contracting out, but we actually start thinking about having technological expertise within the relevant bureau that's really good. That really understands it. At least, even if we do have to contract out, can be watching and asking sensible questions. That couldn't be me. I wouldn't do that well enough, right? But I've known enough in other capacities to make sure I was talking to people who could. And then the second is who has the money. And It has seemed to me for a while, and it's the same thing if we're talking about building retrofits, saying, oh, well, the state doesn't have any money, so we'll have a private contractor do it. The fact of the matter is, in terms of overall budget, we're a much larger organization than anybody we contract with. We're a better financial holder of risk than almost any company in that ever touches our state. And the only reason is we don't have discretionary money. My proposal would be, and I really hope we will consider this before Ways and Means Full, or before this subcommittee approves approves signing off on this contract, or even going forward on a computer system, to consider instead saying, we're going to use current systems, and we're going to amplify collections under current systems, and we had our interchange before. The best information I have, although we've done a lot to amplify collections, we have not reached the maximum of what can be done under current systems, that we increase collections under current systems, put money into that, which more than pays for itself, take the overage of what we get, and save it. There are a few different ways the government can spend money. We like to borrow. This California way is a new way. We do it for somebody else to sort of possess the risk. And the other is for us to save it. Saving is almost always smarter. And it's not as quick, but it's smarter. And so I want to propose that we do that. I want to propose that we amplify collections, save the money, use that money for a computer system, and during that time evaluate whether the way we have to do it has to be through a performance-based contract, or if, in fact, we could do it based on a contract that we can evaluate well. That's what I have to say. I think there's a mistake. How do you feel about that? That's my question.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Smith, well, I respectfully disagree with you.
Shocked.
I'm sure you would be. The reason that we went forward with the benefits-based approach was because we had signals, very clear signals, over time that a $50 or $60 million project was not going to be able to be funded in this economic environment. We have excellent staff that do perform very well on the systems we have today. The problem with the systems we have today is that they're only processing systems. They give you no management information. We do not have a data warehouse. And what this COT system, it's an off-the-shelf system, what this allows is for us to replace our income tax systems with one box, if you will. So we'll still have staff. They will still be working on a variety of systems because we still have lots of other systems in the organization. It's just that this system is going to be able to really impact revenue generation. And it's going to do it quickly. It's going to do it in 5 to 7 years. The last time we had
Which is it, quickly or 5 to 7 years?
5 to 7 years is fast.
All right.
Because if you take a look at what it takes us internally to develop a large system, the last time we did it, it took us about 10 years, and it was just one system. So I appreciate where you're coming from. I don't disagree with the your analysis. But at this point in time, having management reporting, having a data warehouse is very important to us. And we don't have the ability right now in the state of Oregon to have an expert in data warehouse. We don't have that in the state.
And we will disagree to disagree.
Representative Airbrewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the bill, I think a case has been made that the system we need to change the system. We need to update it. It's quite old, and we've probably band-aided on it enough at this point. Sitting on the Revenue Committee, I know that we need more data often, that we're not collecting it. I don't know if the current system can do it. But you mentioned $50 to $60 million. Some of that would be, if we were to go out and buy it, would be what we pay the vendor, and some of it's going to be our own internal costs. The portion of it, though, that we would pay to the vendor, that cost doesn't go away. We're simply replacing the financing of how we're paying for it. So in, for us paying whatever portion of that $50 or $60 million to them, we're saying we don't have it, so they're going to finance it for us through this percentage completion method, percentage of the increment, whatever that percentage is. And because of that, there's a risk that they're taking, so we're going to end up fiscally paying them more. I mean, that's what, you know, they're taking a risk, and so we're going to end up paying them more than if we actually just purchased it right now. What I'm concerned about with the bill as proposed is the baseline is agreed to, but then the terms of the contract are based on this percentage, which is unknown to us. And the term, the length of the contract, could ostensibly, because it goes away from the legislature, could be in perpetuity. And my concern with the way that this bill is worded is it reminds me very much of when a municipality enters into a camera contract with a private enterprise for red lights. And, you know, that's we've got somebody who is putting the capital costs in there. They're collecting on they're counting on people violating and collecting on it. We're not counting on people violating. We're counting on them voluntarily complying, which we already are. But the only incremental money that's going to come through is from people who aren't otherwise complying. And we're now forcing them into compliance through this system. And so I'm concerned about the percentage. What will that be? We've lost oversight of that. And the length of the contract, and that we actually, through this mechanism, although well-intended, that we're actually going to be paying a premium for this system, simply because we have shifted the risk to the developer.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Air Brewer, a couple of things. First of all, when we come back and report to you in the interim, you will have all of the details of the negotiation. You will know what the percentage is. You will know what the baselines are. You will know the total cost of the system, internal costs as well as external costs. So all of that will be known, which is not known today because we're in contract negotiations. There will be a cap on the payment to the vendor. It will not go on into perpetuity. It will be paid for when that cap is reached. And then the uplift continues on to the general fund for in perpetuity. Yes, thank you.
Ms. Gregory, the disconnect from, are you done, Representative Airbrew?
Yes, thank you.
The disconnect for me is that you continue to hear skepticism in this building. Yet you just said, we'll come back to you with a report that tells you all the questions that you have right now because we're continuing to negotiate. And that worries me that you will come back to us with the percentage, the caps. It sounds to me as though you will be coming back and telling the legislature a fait accompli without the legislature's ability to say, we don't think this is such a great idea. I mean, your fundamental methodology has been questioned at almost every forum that I've attended to where this is discussed. And yet you're going ahead negotiating. And I understand the agency's lack of enthusiasm to stop, having spent $6 million already, but you put the legislature in an untenable situation if the next time you come back and report to us, you're reporting on concluded negotiations.
Madam Co-Chair, the negotiations are only done so that we can come to you with specifics. The problem we have is that we cannot come to you with specifics because the procurement laws do not allow us to come to you with anything other than what the companies give us in their RFP, which, as you know, is not what the end deal is. So what we have worked out with our attorney is that we are going through contract negotiations. The vendor understands that the arbiter of this, the decision maker, is you. They know that they are at risk for losing this business because we will come back with the specifics in next biennium. And if you say no, all bets are off.
But the problem I have is what you just said, that there's a delta between the RFP and the end deal. I have no idea how big that delta is going to be. And I think that the way perhaps we're asking for RFPs is a little odd. back in my old life, when we would get a solicitation, how much can you set this power pole with a helicopter for? We'd say we can do it for $1,000. And it was pretty straightforward. We would respond to a solicitation. You're telling us we put out an RFP, but there's some delta between that and the end deal, and we just want you to trust us. And do you have any sense of magnitude of what that differential is?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have reported in our most recent business case, which was given to you, a little two-page summary, that the range that the vendor might receive is somewhere between $38 and $69 million. I can tell you that is the range the vendor would receive. And through negotiations, which I cannot talk about, and my attorney's right.
Well, you got your lawyer right behind you.
I can assure you that we are being very shrewd to make sure the state's interests are to get the best value for the dollar. And at the end of the day, our hope was to give you the kind of detail to answer precisely the questions you're asking during an interim and for the 2013 session so that we can say, here is what you get for your dollar. Here's how you will pay for it through the funding mechanism that we believe was the best way to go when we were told if it was self-funded or another way to fund it other than getting an appropriation would be the way to go, and give you all those details. And then you could make an informed decision, and that's really the premise we're working on, is to get to the point. And the vendor knows that everything we're doing is contingent to your approval.
Okay, one last question, and that is the last time that we were together during this short session, I think there was a question about almost $1 billion in receivables right now. Correct in my recollection of that?
Yes.
And I think that the question was posed to you, what do you know about those receivables? How aged are they? What decades were they accrued in? Blah, blah, blah. And I recall the answer that you offered me, we don't have any of that data. So does the baseline include the opportunity for the vendor to participate in the receipt of delinquent receivables as part of the overall improvement, and thereby get benefit out of that which we seem to have just ignored for X number of years, ignored is too harsh a word, not been very satisfactory over some unspecified period of years, until it amounts to $1 billion of receivables?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do not recall the conversation that you had just mentioned, but I can say that we do have a good understanding of the age of the accounts receivables that we're responsible for administering, and that is an important part of the discussion that we're having with regard to how we establish baselines. And in administering revenue systems like ours, the more timely you can get to people who are delinquent, the more effective you are at being able to generate their payment of the debt. And so we do know quite a bit about the history and are continuously looking, even before we got into a contract with the vendor, of what are the best methods to try and collect that debt.
Go ahead, Representative Smith. We're going to ask the same question. Have at it.
But that was a wholly unsatisfactory answer, because first, if we know about it, that means we should be going and getting it, and we should do everything we possibly humanly can to get it before we set a baseline. Because I think what you just said, without saying the word yes, is that the uncollected accounts receivable are, at least in the negotiations, to be included within the baseline. So I'm baffled why we are not doing absolutely, because by the way, it's not a computer system that is going to get these people to pay. It's not going to be the correctly worded email written by a robot. It's going to be a human being that contacts them and sleuths where they are and persuades them to pay. And so I don't understand why we're trying to hire robots when it's human beings that need to collect some of this money. And by the way, if there's $1 billion, I'll concede. Let's say there's half that. All we have to do is collect 10% of it to pay for this. Just pay for it and not have to worry about whether we're getting hornswoggled. Or hoodwinked. Or bamboozled.
Madam Chair?
You may respond to bamboozling.
Representative Smith, I completely understand why you would think that. However, with our current systems, a lot of what we're looking to do is automate things that are currently manual, which will give us capacity to do the very things you're talking about, to give us the opportunity to be more effective at touching more accounts more swiftly, to have a better vision into when we can see when things become delinquent. Our current systems, they age longer than it takes for us to see it. And so there are benefits that we think we can report to you that will show you how we would be more effective at collecting on our aged accounts.
Okay, colleagues, any more questions from the panel? Because we do have one person signed up on the sign-up sheet and some others have come into the room. If you are moved by the spirit of testimony, could you raise your hand and I will make sure you get the sign-up sheet.
Welcome.
Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thanks for putting up with us. we've been pretty hard. As you can tell, we have a lot of concerns, but you know, we're trying to be judicious with our money and our negotiations, and we're kind of in the dark in a lot of things and trying not to be. So I apologize if we've come across a little bit cross, but thank you for your hard work on it.
You're wonderful people as human beings. We value you.
Representative Gerard.
We appreciate that.
Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. I just wanted to point out to the committee that Ms. Gregory's last day with the agency is Wednesday, and she retires. And you have cooperated with this committee while you've been interim director, and we appreciate that, and we wish you well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Gerard speaks on behalf of the entire committee. We do have public testimony, and I am going to invite Ms. Mosier to come. First, before you depart, you brought your lawyer with. Ms. Johnson, are there any comments that you would like to make?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't want to bring you over and deprive you of the opportunity. So with that, I'm going to invite Ms. Mosier to come forward and offer testimony. Good afternoon, Ms. Mosier.
Madam Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee, good afternoon. I am pleased to be here, I'm here as a public citizen, and I had written down some things, but I may not say all of them now because Representative Smith has said many of those things, so thank you for that.
I'm sorry.
I am. My name is Micheline Mosier. I'm here as a public citizen. I'm here as a mother and grandmother, but I do want to disclose that I'm a revenue employee, and in the next few days I'll be there 10 years. I'm here to ask questions. First, I want to thank you for adding oversight in the engrossed bill, but I am wondering, is it enough oversight? I'm going to interject here that I'm very pleased to hear the types of questions that you're asking. I'm asking those questions as well. It's important to me that revenue gets it right with any new systems. More importantly, it's important to my extended family and other Oregonians. I appreciate the changes brought to the engrossed bill. But here's a question. Can't the employees of the Department of Revenue focus on bringing in as much money as we can through compliance, collection, and enforcement? Right now, if I didn't feel it was important to be here, I would be keying checks for deposit. There was a group of concerned employees from Revenue who visited with Michael Jordan.
I think this is important for people that are listening to his testimony. I'm going to interrupt you. You're here on your own time, are you not?
I am here on my own time, but because it came up so suddenly, I'm here on personal leave.
Okay, thank you.
And on my own time, with a group of concerned employees, we visited with Michael Jordan and shared some concerns. We did have an ask in that meeting. We asked that rather than purchase a proprietary system, which I understand the Gentac to be, and I've tried to be an informed employee and gone to as many informational meetings as I can, we suggested as a group that Department of Revenue be granted $500,000 and 6 months of IT staff time to build, build a true data warehouse. Shouldn't we have clarity in this process? Only then, after having a data warehouse and what that will do, shouldn't we then look to measure the lift and establish the baseline? I assure you that employees are collecting taxes with our current systems. They are not broken as reported in Tax Express. Again, I wonder if there's enough oversight in this bill. Shouldn't the legislature have more power over how the money is spent? Even though this has been, sorry, I'm terribly nervous.
No, take your time. It's fine. Just take a breath. Nobody here is going to bite you. It's okay.
We only treat other state employees.
Managers, apparently.
Like normal people like you, we're nice people.
Well, I won't come back as a revenue employee then. even though this has been explained to me as an employee, why does there need to be a separate or special fund, as is in 1530? Should contracts be signed, even with the conditions, when revenue is lacking top leadership? And I do want to thank Director Gregory for her service, because we've asked a lot of tough questions at revenue as well and in the public. But we've lost a lot of top leadership, and as I go back over the last 2 years, I'm seeing that. I would also like to thank the members of this committee for their diligence in prior meetings and, again, in what I've heard today. As a public citizen, I want efficient government and planned replacement under leadership that is committed to be there to see that Oregon gets a big bang for their technology buck. Thank you for being judicious. I am of the understanding that the Revenue Committee passed this on to you without a recommendation.
That's correct.
And I do appreciate Representative Smith's concerns, and I would be interested in the answers. We do need to carefully consider our path. We do need to have good technical expertise. And by golly, I'm impressed enough with the people of Oregon to think that we do have the talent here to put forth to help our to help us fly with our own wings. I don't agree with Director Gregory's analysis. I share that with Representative Smith. And if we are bringing in a proprietary system and the things that that entails, I wonder if that limits the desire of the people of Oregon, as expressed by our legislators, whom we elect and whom we direct to do our work. And I also did have kind of the feeling that, was there Texas Hold'em being played here today? Are we going to see the cards coming forth after the fact? I'm very concerned about the drive to sign a contract, I admit. Grandma doesn't have a clue about what is involved in state contracts. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Mosier? Representative Gregg.
I just wanted to congratulate you, because you did a very nice job in presenting your very difficult topic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Steiner-Hayward.
Our senator.
I'm senator. Sorry.
She's new, but she's powerful.
Actually, I just want to add on to Representative Garrard's thing. It takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing. I've been in your chair in the past, and I remember what it felt like. And to take your personal time shows your dedication and your commitment, and we're very fortunate to have people like you committed to public service. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Madam Chair. How, in terms of the current system, so you've had to use the current computer systems, which I imagine are somewhat outdated. How bad are they? And don't try to, your points are well taken, and I share them, and so I'm not trying to ask you to add to your argument, but just be as candid as you can be about how clunky they are. If it looks like, War Games green type on black screens, how bad or good are the systems you currently use?
Well, since we do work for over 30 tax programs, I can't really speak to that. I can tell you that my only concerns with the system that I use to enter personal property tax and many other things, as well as to clear cash, everything's working just fine except some work done by a contractor, and we get a drop digit off field 8 or 8A on the state tax forms. So if you've made $100,000 and it's in that field, you lose the first one or two digits. They're still working on that, but that's not the problem of the system. That's the problem of the software. And I don't key all the programs, and I am not in a position to really address that, but I can certainly gather some information for you and send that on to you, as long as I'm not violating what I'm doing as an employee.
Follow-up, Representative Smith.
I think just one more. And no, you don't need to go out and do a bunch of homework. I just want to have, all the information that you do have. I want to test my assumption. So I have this assumption that there is more still to be garnered from using existing systems and maybe amplified collections on using those current systems. I want to test that assumption with you. If there were another one of you or another person who does, I don't even know if you do collections, but people who do collections, is it your impression by being within that context that the current systems could stomach that and there'd be more collections to be had using current systems? And you might not be able to evaluate, but to the extent you can.
Well, first off, I want to say I'm as fond of the shiny new computers as the next person, okay? But I don't think this is the right time. I'm very appreciative the legislature held back on these things. I do feel that it would be important to have a data warehouse, but the cost of that, I don't believe, is anything near what we're committing to. I am very concerned, and I have worked as a data programmer before for a division of Bendex. I'm very concerned about being in a proprietary system where you can't see what the code is and we can't change it. So the contractors linger on and linger on. So that's much more of a concern to me. Right now we have competent people who've been there for a long time fixing things, and it's not broken at this point. And I think that I see other things that happen in terms of, okay, I'm taking off my public citizen hat and putting on my employee hat. I see a lot more things happening in terms of the holding positions vacant, that we are having money fall off the table. And I will go ahead and reference the conference group that they were not able to fill all seven positions of that group, and as a consequence, things were not done statutorily in order to have collect money, basically. And I don't work for conference, but I do. I listen well to lots of employees.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Before I turn to Senator Steiner Hayward, I would suggest, Representative Smith, some of us have had the opportunity to go over and actually tour the building and look around. Visually, some of the systems appear pretty vulnerable without even watching what they're doing. I mean, stacks and stacks and stacks of material. It might be worth arranging a tour. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Actually, this question is not for our excellent witness, so if other people have questions for her, I'd let them go first. If not, maybe we can excuse her, and then I can ask a question of the rest of the committee.
Okay. Colleagues, any additional questions for Ms. Mosher? Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, Senator.
One of the advantages and disadvantages of being the newest legislator in the building is that you look at things a little bit differently and you come in with a sort of beginner's mind. I'm also serving on two Ways and Means subcommittees, so I'm hearing things in lots of different settings. In Human Services, which is my other subcommittee, we've been hearing recently from the Oregon Health Authority about the internal computer system that they're choosing, the computer system that they're developing to manage the insurance exchange, which they're doing entirely internally for some of the reasons Ms. Mosher pointed out, which is that the ability to manage it, to support it, to change it, to adapt it to whatever their needs are internally without relying on external support. I guess I don't have a ton of background on this project, but I guess my biggest question is, why was the choice made, and is it too late to regroup on that choice to develop the expertise internally? What I gather from OHA is that we have that kind of expertise in state or at least in country where we can hire people who know how to do this kind of stuff, who are interested in doing this kind of work at a cost that does not seem any worse, if not somewhat better, than what has been described to us here.
I think you're asking a rhetorical question. I'd invite the agency to come forward if they'd like. Representative Nathanson, then Representative Airbrewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just wanted to share a slightly different perspective from working on budgets in the past few years that involve recommendations for technology projects, hardware replacement, software upgrade, complete system replacement, or expansion of modules. We need to do more things, and how do you tack those on to what we have? Oregon has, as any state would have, I don't want to imply that Oregon is worse or has been unusual, but when you have really big projects, there's also really big risk, and there are several very high-profile, very expensive technology projects in the last decade or two that have gone south.
Some of those were done in-house. We've also had experience with contracting for things that didn't go so well. So I don't. I hope that no one wants to make a recommendation based on, if you do it in-house, it's always better. If you contract, it's always better. I think neither one of those as an absolute is correct. And we're in the middle of watching another humongous project, the eCourt project, that went through a major change of direction. It was going to be done one way, and then all of a sudden that was abandoned because it was going to be too costly, take too much time, and instead there's basically a kind of like an off-the-shelf solution vendor with experience in other states that's been brought in, and things are already being rolled out. And we've just seen examples of how you pull something out of failure. So yes, we do need
Madam
to be very
Chair,
careful.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Representative. I completely hear what you're saying, Representative Nathanson, and I appreciate you. I was not saying it. If I wasn't clear, I apologize. I wasn't saying it as this is clearly the better solution. I'm asking as much for my own edification and trying to be a thoughtful member of the committee as anything else. So I appreciate your pointing out both examples. Thank you.
Representative Bear Brewer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. In response, Senator Steiner Hayward, bless you for being on three subcommittees.
Only two. I can't claim three.
Oh, I thought you said two other
no.
ones. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Two subcommittees total.
Just in response to my understanding of OHA and their self-development, first off, the health insurance exchange is a new product nationally. There aren't best practices necessarily established nationally.
Good point.
And the creating it internally, they hired folks specifically to create that.
Right.
So not sure of how they hired, but they could have hired a coordinated team internally versus going out and hiring a vendor that may not exist yet. So when they met with me, I thought, gosh, after you do this, sell your services to other states mm-hmm. at this point and make some money. That was just in response. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. That's useful information.
Thank you. Representative Smith, just before you comment, I see them putting on their coats like they're getting ready to leave. I would like to introduce two young ladies who have spent the day here with me, Leah Davis and Zoe Duncan-Doroff. They are eighth graders at the Portland Jewish Academy, and they have had a full day here at the Capitol, and I appreciate them coming to visit. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to me, there are at least two, and Ms. Mosier raised a third issue that I want to put on the record. The one is contract in or contract out. And I am agnostic on that question, but I would like us to be diligent about investing in in-house technological expertise so that we are better able to make that evaluation. The second issue is whether we should sign the contract now, enter negotiations now for a benefits-based contract, or whether we should spend money now for more collections, use the money that we raise to buy a computer system. And it's that second thing I also want us to be, I have an obvious view, but I also want us to be thinking about. And then the third, I guess I would just say, and maybe, is that in the negotiations, I hope that us owning the code, us not being addicted to a single contractor is a really important point, because that would seem, you know, to hold us over a barrel anytime we have repairs, anytime, you know, if we want to renegotiate at some point. But I hope that we won't enter into something that's that proprietary.
I am going to invite the agency up to comment on that one point, because I think it's an especially valuable point, and then we're going to conclude the hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Eric Smith, Department of Revenue. If I may address Representative Smith's question.
Please.
The vendor that we have selected, it is proprietary code. They have been in 24 different jurisdictions, 16 of them states. They have successfully on time and on budget completed all their projects. And the way that you address a proprietary code is you enter into an escrow agreement. So if something happened to that firm, the code is an escrow, and if they are, and there's a lot of terms in that escrow agreement, but if they fail to perform
on a number of different levels, then we get access to that code. But we will also have staff who will be alongside them while it's being implemented, and we'll have a great deal of knowledge about the system and how to improve and enhance the system. It's not where we have no access to be able to use the system and work on it.
Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I when I'm not here, I work at OHSU, and just a few months ago left a position as co-chair of the Institutional Review Board there, and we had a online system, the vendor of which escapes me, but it's not important, and we actually worked out an agreement with them where we would, our in-house people would develop new modules and then basically sell them back, that they could then in turn sell to other customers around the country. And it was a win-win situation because we had access to the code, could make modifications as we needed to. They would get work done for them, and it was a kind of cool arrangement. And if you want me to connect you with the people up there to get more information, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Representative Nathanson, you're going to get the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's several different kinds of choices or issues that we've been talking about. Whether there's a need at all, is something broken, is it not broken? Are we getting enough out of the system that we currently have? Could it be made better? Do we have to start over? That's one kind of question. Another is, okay, if it's determined something could be improved, should we do it ourselves or should someone else be doing it? Another kind of question. The one that is especially interesting but hard for me is financing. How do we pay for a really big project, whether we're paying to hire a limited duration staff, dozens of them perhaps, to do a very, very large system change project? It's going to be very costly no matter what we do. How do we fund that? And I think there is quite a bit of unease about something that's not only a kind of a new to us financing scheme where it's based at the benefit or value, you know, how do you determine the baseline? Basically, are we paying too much for this? Did we give away the farm when we shouldn't have? And that's the thing I still haven't come to terms with about, is this financing proposal being constructed in the best interest of the state.
Thank you very much. That was the last legislative word. Ms. Byerly gets the actual last word.
Oh, I just wanted to say this committee, you should have an email saying that you may need to come and have a meeting tomorrow afternoon. There may be a couple more items for the committee, but we'll keep you posted on that. And there is a full committee meeting in the morning at 8:30 for those of you on
board. Yes. Thank you very much.
The one from Ms. Rumbaugh just says it. Natural resources tomorrow.
Ms. Gregory, as a courtesy to you, this may be one of your last appearances. Anything else you want to add before I close the public hearing?
Madam Co-Chair, thank you very much for having us here today, for listening to this conversation. I do think that it's very important for the Department of Revenue to move forward with this project. And I think long-term, the state of Oregon will be much better off for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1530A relating to funding for technology projects for the Department of Revenue. Anything else to come before the committee? Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Stand adjourned.